Stacks is a boutique strategy consultancy currently hiring for several roles across its three U.S. offices. With attractive compensation, fast-paced projects, and the opportunity to be promoted quickly, Stacks is an attractive place to start or continue your consulting career. If you're looking for a consulting role in a rigorous environment where you work side-by-side with senior leaders on engagements across industries and project types, Stacks might be the perfect firm for you. Find open positions plus job descriptions and requirements at the link in the show notes, or visit the firm's careers page at stacks.com. That's STAX.com.
Hi, my name's Edward, and I'm going to be pursuing a career in consulting upon graduation. As an intern for Management Consulted, I would love it if you were able to fill out a quick survey linked in the show note description. This is going to help Strategy Simplified improve and become far more tailored to you, the individual, looking for a career in consulting. Thank you.
Strategy Simplified. Today, we're bringing you a treat in the form of a McKinsey case interview demonstration. The session features Sonakshi, who is a PhD candidate from the Netherlands graduating this spring. Sonakshi is recruiting now for top consulting firms like McKinsey, Bain, Accenture, BCG, etc. The interviewer is Alessandro, who is a former BCG project leader, and the case is in McKinsey's interviewer-led style. Alessandro is also a management consultant case coach, and he's helped candidates land offers at a number of top firms like MBB, Deloitte, Accenture, and more. You can actually work with him one-on-one through Zoom coaching sessions. Click the link in the show notes to check that out. In addition, in the show notes, you'll find a link to access the exhibits or the charts from this case study. We encourage you to follow along with pencil and paper to see if you can crack the case. All right, let's dive in.
Brilliant. Yeah, so we'll kick off then. I think today the idea is doing a round one for typical case. McKinsey style, so I'll be leading the majority of it. Let me know when you're ready and you can kick it off.
Yeah, I'm ready.
Brilliant. So your client is the Singapore Art Museum, SAM, a government-funded art institution with the objective of welcoming international visitors to experience local Singaporean art and exhibitions. Due to decreasing funding from the Singaporean government over the past few years, SAM has set a goal to grow profitability from commercial activities. How would you go about advising SAM on tackling this problem?
Perfect. Thank you very much for the prompt. Just so I have everything in place, our client for the day is Singapore Art Museum, or SAM, yeah, which is essentially a government entity that showcases art, Singaporean art specifically. And they've had decreased funding in the last year. And the problem for today is to figure out how to grow profitability. Is there any other objective that I've missed, or is there any other objective?
No, that's it. So it's grow profitability specifically from commercial activity. So you don't have to look at like getting increased funding from the government and things like that.
All right. And do we have a timeline set for that? Do they have a specific timeline in mind or a specific number in mind?
No, not specifically. They just want to know what the art of the possible is here.
Oh, what the possibilities are. Perfect. Just so I know, when you said decreased funding, it's over the last year or over the last years. Do we know when that happened or what changed?
We don't know the specific dates, but it's been a slow kind of gradual change.
So they've been pulling back slowly.
Well, they haven't been pulling back. It's just that their income has been declining, and they, you know, want to figure out why over the past few years.
Perfect. Commercial activity. Do you have any information about what that actually means? So, for example, for an art museum, I would guess that they have events organized, or they lease out the space, or they sponsor people. What would commercial activities actually entail?
So the bulk of their income comes from government funding, but that's non-discretionary. So they put all of their effort on kind of controllable, so not non-discretionary, non-controllable. So they put all their effort on this controllable funding element, like most museums. The commercial activity is like private events is one of them. Exhibitions is another, and then kind of international outreach, international, you know, dealing with the Singaporean diaspora, trying to gain donations. Those are the three main activities, but they're open-minded.
Okay, perfect. All right. Is it okay if I take a few minutes to figure out how I want to tackle the problem?
Yeah, absolutely.
We'll be right back after this quick break.
Are you looking for your next role in consulting? Then Investor Group Services, or IGS, needs to be on your list of target firms. At IGS, you'll work closely with senior firm leaders to help private equity and corporate clients make better investment and strategic decisions. The work at IGS involves a blend of research and strategic consulting, along with plenty of collaboration with client stakeholders. Find out for yourself if IGS is the perfect fit for you via the link in this episode's show notes or at igsboston.com.
Okay. So in order to figure out how to increase profitability, specifically through commercial activities for the Singaporean Art Museum, I'd like to first concentrate on profitability and then look at other alternatives that we could have, which they haven't possibly taken into account. So I have three buckets, essentially. The first one is the financial aspect of a Singaporean Art Museum that brings out to profit increase. In this bucket, I would like to look at the revenue and costs. When I talk about revenue, I'd also like to segment that into two ways, since I'd like to understand if they calculate their revenues based on the total number of customers they get or the total number of events that they have. So essentially look at volume of customers and volume of events, and then respectively the corresponding price, multiply that with the price of say each ticket sale for the customer aspect or the price for each event that they organize. So that's for the revenue part. In the profit, in the first market also, I'd like to look at cost, because that also should be taken into account if we actually end up having these commercial activities. It's important to know what kind of costs we're going to incur and if that's going to cause trouble. So in that, I'd like to look at fixed costs and variable costs. For fixed costs, essentially, that's the rent that they have to have for the space that they have in Singapore, and the salary of the management and things like that. And for variable costs, if we have more events, it could possibly mean that we'd have to hire new marketing agencies, hire consultants, or hire outreach, people who can do outreach for us. So that would also be something that we need to take into account. And that's for the financial aspect for the profit side. And in the other alternatives, I know you mentioned that they're mostly looking at commercial activities, but just to have a global picture of what these commercial activities could entail, maybe we could also look at what other alternatives we have to increase profitability if we don't find a proper solution for the first half. And the third thing I'd like to just understand if Sam is actually capable of, how do you say, increasing their profit by these specific activities that you mentioned. So can they actually manage to host these events and hold exhibitions, and if they have the manpower or the financial power to be able to sustain these events for a longer term. Do you think I've missed something in the structure, or should we take something else into account that I didn't think of?
Yeah, I think that's a good basis. So if you had to figure out which of those, just give me an indication of which of those you think is the most important, where you think that maybe the case is going to be, what would you say?
I guess the most important would be the first part, where we look at profits to understand where the profits come from with the revenues and the costs, and see how the division is done.
And do you have any view on like what might be happening from the outside in?
I would think that considering the funding has been going down, they've possibly had to reduce the number of events that they can organize because they don't have the money to organize it, which would also result in lesser sales or lesser tickets. And that's why the profit would also go down, because they just don't have the volume for it. It could be on the volume side, or it could also be the price side, because they have such less funding that they have to restructure their pricing for the tickets. And that could also be a cause for declining profits.
Okay, so I'm just noting this down. I suppose that would make sense, but then the kind of, if they're making money, why would the events, not having funding for the events, matter? So funding for the events goes down. Surely if they're making money, they can source funding for them, right? If they're profitable.
So when you say funding, we essentially mean how much money they have lying around to be able to organize these events.
You said funding was going down, not me. So I'm just latching onto that. Just trying to understand.
Sorry, could you repeat that?
You said the words funding is going down. So I'm just trying to understand what you mean by that.
Then maybe I got the question wrong. So I thought that the funding has been going down. The government funding has been going down, and that's why they'd like to. They've noticed that they'd like to increase their profitability.
So I think that could make sense. So let's move on to the first question then. So whilst entry to SAN is free, tickets are sold for special exhibitions. One senior management member is evaluating the possibility of changing the frequency of hosting special exhibitions to 3 special exhibitions per year, each one lasting 15 weeks. At the moment, they do 4 special exhibitions per year, each lasting for up to 11 weeks. The reason is that 2 weeks are required to change display items between exhibitions. So, you know, move from Egyptology to, Chinese art, whatever it might be, then they need to actually literally move the exhibitions.
I actually didn't get all the numbers in. So we currently they have 3 special exhibitions that they're holding, and they'd like to change that to 4 special exhibitions.
Yeah.
Each lasting 11 weeks with a 2-day gap between each of them.
So currently it's 15 weeks.
Currently then, 15 weeks. Yeah.
And then in future it's going to be 11 weeks. And then the 2 weeks is you can't, you know, do it all year round because you need to actually change the exhibitions a bit. So I'm going to give you a bunch of data.
Okay.
Just to figure out if you think that switch is a good idea. Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, so there's about 500,000 visitors who are interested to see each special exhibition. The first and last week of each special exhibition are the least popular times. And in those weeks, each of those weeks attracts 5% of interested visitors.
Sorry, I didn't catch that. So there's 500,000
visitors. The first and last week of each special exhibition are the least popular times.
Okay.
Each only attracting 5% of interested visitors.
Okay.
The remaining visitors' choice of visit timing is split evenly across other weeks.
Okay.
The maximum capacity of the exhibition space per week is 40,000. And tickets to special exhibitions sell for $10. So we're looking at the profitability of that. Do you have what you need?
I have one half of it, at least.
Good. What else do you need? What else do you need from me?
Let me just take a look at all the data here. So that's 40K per week is the maximum capacity. Do we have anything on the cost side?
Yeah, what kind of costs would you expect for an exhibition? What would be the costs?
So I would think that the costs that they would occur would be hiring the artist, that could be something that we have to take into account. So I'm guessing these are exhibitions from that are outsourced. There could be costs which would be in the marketing side, if Sam is going to also be part of the marketing of the exhibition. And there could be costs that it involves in the sense of the organization of the exhibition. So you mentioned that there's going to be 2 weeks of delay between the two exhibitions. So that could mean that there need to be people who are going to change exhibition things from one to the other. So there could be costs that are incurred in terms of the labor and the things. Wow, I have no words right now, but the material costs.
What do you mean by material costs?
A material cost in the sense that if there's an exhibition that requires, say, a red carpet versus an exhibition that requires the yellow carpet, so there could be materials that would be needed for different exhibitions. That could be also something that we'd have to take into account.
Yeah. Just writing some notes. Great. Okay, so let's say that we just consider fixed costs, we ignore variable costs, and there's $3 million to stage each exhibition.
$3 million for each exhibition.
Exactly.
And we're not taking into account any of the variable costs, right?
Exactly.
Okay, perfect. All right. So what I'd like to do first, maybe I could just talk to you about it before I start.
Sure.
We know the price of the ticket. We have maximum capacity of 40K per week. Okay. We have 500,000 visitors. That's for the entire duration of the exhibition. Is that correct?
500,000 is the amount that are interested to see the exhibition. So it's like your time, your total addressable market almost. If there is space, you can say that that many people, if the exhibition space was infinitely large, that many visitors would attend.
Okay.
Right.
That's good to know. So what I'd like to do is just compare the current situation versus the future situation, which would be three special exhibitions versus four special exhibitions. They're both going to last for different time durations, so we'll take that into account as well. And I'd like to calculate the revenue that we get from these two. And then see how they compare to the costs that we would be incurring.
Okay, go for it.
Okay. So we first look at the current. Okay, I'm just going to take a moment to write things down, and then once I have them, I could talk to you about it just to see if I got everything while I'm doing the calculations.
Sure, take time.
So what I first want to do is calculate the number of people that are coming now for these special exhibitions. So we have each exhibition lasts for 15 weeks, and there are three of them. So that's about 45 weeks of on days of exhibition. And we have a total capacity of 40K per week. If it was a case of each week, they have the full, it's full at maximum capacity, or it's at maximum capacity, it would be 40K to 45. But we know that the first and the last week get only 5% of visitors. So I would also take that into account.
So how many weeks would get 5 visitors in the future state? I would get 5%.
Sorry?
How many weeks then in total would get 5% visitors?
So that would be 6 weeks that would have 5% visitors eventually.
Okay.
And that from that is 39 weeks that gets hopefully the 100% visitors.
Okay.
So that would mean so for 6 weeks we have 5% of what do you
say? 5% of what, sorry?
5% of 40K.
What's 40K?
That's 40K is the total capacity. 1 second. No, maybe I shouldn't take the maximum capacity. I should take the number of people that's interested. Yeah, that makes sense. And so that's 5% of that is 0.5. That's 25K off for 6 weeks, which is 'm slightly confused by that. And then we have 100% of 0.5 million, which is 0.5. No? And then what I would do is multiply the total number of interested visitors with the ticket price to get the total revenue that we get for this year.
Okay, so let's take a step back a second. So we've got 15 weeks. You're close, but I think you're stumbling on a couple of points here, right? So let's start with the future, because that's where you started, right? Let's start with one exhibition. You've got 15 weeks. The first and the last week, it's 5% multiplied by how many interested visitors?
0.5.
500,000, great. Okay, so 5% times 500,000 is what?
25K.
Okay.
25,000, yeah.
Times two?
That's 50K.
Right, okay. So you've got 50K to start off with. Then for the remaining 13 weeks, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
You're spreading what?
That's the full, that's 100% of 500K.
What is 100%?
So it's 500K.
No, but is it 100% of the 500K? Don't you have to take some out?
Okay. So that's just to keep the maximum capacity in place. That will be 40K.
So we have to do that as well, right? But we've already got 50K, haven't we?
Yes.
For the first and last week. So instead of 500,000, it's going to be 450,000, right?
Yes.
And then how many days are left?
Weeks
are left.
I'm so confused right now. So we have 2 weeks that we've taken into account.
And covered. Then the... Yeah.
Yeah, and then the rest is the rest number of people is 450K.
Mm-hmm.
That's for the 13 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
What am I missing here?
Yeah, so you're on the right track. So then you spread the 450 across those 13 weeks, right?
Exactly. So
that gives you how many would attend if the capacity was infinite, right?
That would be 50K per week then. But we have a capacity of 40K only.
Well, so 450 divided by 13 is what?
It's 65. Sorry, my bad.
Take time.
No, take time. My bad. And that's about 30 Let me see how much that is. Around 35, I believe.
Okay, that'll do. So, does that mean everyone can attend, or does that mean we're restricted in capacity terms?
I think everybody can, if it's 35, then everybody can attend with 5K to spare, 5K seats per week to spare.
Okay, cool. So what do we need to do then to calculate the revenue for all three exhibitions that year for the new model?
So this is the 15 weeks is the old model, right?
Is 15 weeks is the new model, but it doesn't matter. I mean, we'll just calculate the difference. 15 weeks is the new model. If I misspoke, I apologize.
If 15 weeks is the new model, then 15 multiplied by 4 is 60 weeks, which is more than 1 year.
No, because it's three exhibitions per year, each lasting 15 weeks, or four exhibitions per year, each lasting 11 weeks.
Oh, okay. You had two options.
Yeah.
Okay.
But we know everyone can attend, right, with the 15-week model?
Exactly.
So how do we get to the revenue?
Then we just calculate it by the total number of people that can attend, multiplied by the price of each.
Okay, yeah, which is?
That's $10 per ticket.
Yeah.
And okay, take a step back, because now I think I'm quite confused. So we're looking at 15 weeks for now, which has three exhibitions. And then we saw that there would be 6 weeks where there would be, that's not the 6 weeks. If you take one exhibition into account, that would have 50K plus 450K. That would be all the people that could attend the exhibition if it's a 15-week possibility. And that would mean that for the total revenue, it would be the number of exhibitions that we have, which is 3 multiplied by 0.5. And that multiplied by the price. Interested that it is, so that's multiplied by the price. That's $15 million. That would be for the 3-week exhibition. And I could do the same thing, possibly faster this time.
Don't go for speed. Just take your time. Okay.
For the 11 weeks, or 4 special exhibitions.
Yeah. No, you've got to take me through it. If you don't take me through it, I can't help you out.
Yeah. So I'm just doing the exact same calculations, which would be 50 for starting with one exhibition, the first exhibition, that would last for 11 weeks. That would mean out of that 2 weeks, it's going to be, we'll have 50K as its total people attending, which is the same as we calculated before. And then the 9 weeks that we have would have
450 divided by 9, right?
should not have the numbers correctly here, sorry.
No, wait. You do have the numbers. Look, just don't worry. Okay? This is exactly the environment. This is the environment where you want to have issues, right? Because I'm going to help you through it and we're going to fix it. We're going to give you the tools, okay?
Yeah. So that's 450 divided by 9, which is 50K, but we don't have 50K space.
Okay.
So we have to keep the 10K aside for each week, and that's 40K that we can use at maximum capacity for the 9 weeks.
Okay, great. So so the 40K, so how many attendees can you have then?
That would be 360K for the 9 weeks. Plus the 50.
Great.
Which is 410K for each exhibition.
Yep.
And if we look at the total revenue for the second option, that will be 410 by 4 multiplied by 10 to the price. That's $16.4 million.
Wow. Great. Okay. And then the costs?
Yes. As for the costs, we have... So just to clarify, $3 million is for each exhibition, right?
Mm-hmm.
And there's no cost for the 2 weeks that are going to be extra.
No, you can just look at the per exhibition costs. Don't worry about the non-exhibition costs.
So for the three special exhibition is 3 multiplied by 3 million, because that's the price for each exhibition, $9 million. And for the 4 exhibition is 403, which is $12 million. And since we have the fixed cost for the two options, we could also then just calculate the profit. Which would be revenue minus cost. Let's see. $9 million. And so it seems like the three special exhibitions that last 15 weeks is more profitable with $6 million compared to $4.4 million for the four special exhibition option.
Great. Okay. Sorry, can you give me those numbers again just to make sure?
Yeah. So that's for the three special exhibitions, it's $6 million.
Uh-huh.
That's 15 minus 9. And for the four special exhibition, that's 16.4 minus 12 is 4.4.
Excellent. Okay, great. So look, I'm going to show you the graph, just conscious of time. I just want you to think about what the conclusions would be on the types of exhibitions that you would be putting on, and anything else that kind of might influence the strategy for growth for the museum at a higher level. So... don't need any specific analysis, more like a just an indication. Can you see that chart?
Yeah. Okay. I'm just going to take a few seconds to look at the graph. Okay, so we want to look at what are the possibilities for growth in terms of the visitors that we get. And from this graph, we see that ex-Asia, I would think that those are what you would call internationals. So there are more international visitors that have been coming to SAM compared to the domestic visitors or people who live in Singapore or Asians who are there. Are these number in millions or doesn't
know.
Matter? Okay, doesn't matter. So it seems like mostly the domestic visitors and the Asian visitors is they seem to be the same over the past 3 years, whereas there are more international visitors that SAM is getting because we see like an almost exponential rise to the total number of visitors that we have. So what we can do is use this information to figure out who actually our customers are. Considering it seems like international visitors are much more likely to come to SAM compared to the domestic ones. So if we actually organize events which would entice more ex-Asians, that could be something that we could look at.
Is there anything you think of in terms of like how the museum is, you know, amenities or how it's structured or anything that would appeal to that? Any specific example?
So the question is, what kind of amenities there are in SAM that's causing more people from outside to enter?
So if you know more ex-Asia visitors are coming next year, is there anything that you can think of that you would do to either the exhibitions or to the amenities or anything else specifically? Just one example to appeal to them.
Yeah, exactly. So considering ex-Asians are people who don't live in Asia, right? They're all internationals. I would think that it would be nice if we know that they're going to be national, maybe we could organize events that are catered more to internationals. So for example, have a day of UK or a day of Europe and things like that, where they could come by to see their things, which could be nice. Or depending on what the internationals are actually looking for, we could restructure the museum in a way that could be more enticing to them. And yeah, it also really depends on that's what I can think of for now.
Okay. So why don't you take a second and synthesize the case and then we can have a chat.
Yeah. I'm just going to take a second to get everything in place.
We'll be right back after this quick message.
Hey there, are you looking to break into consulting this year? In addition to continuing to listen to this podcast, there are a bunch of other ways you can engage with Management Consultant. Check out our website, managementconsultant.com. On there, one of the ways you'll find to engage with us is through Black Belt, our premium case prep program. In the program, you receive one-on-one mentorship and prep support from a former MBB consultant. They're there to guide you to offer success through developing a personalized plan for your prep and guiding you through drill-based coaching sessions. In addition, you'll receive expert resume and cover letter edits. Because let's be honest, case prep is only so good if you don't get the interview. 80% of Black Belts land offers, which is why it's the world's most effective consulting prep program. If you're ready to quit wasting time in your prep process, join today. The next cohort of Black Belt kicks off very soon with a group training session on the fundamentals of consulting, recruiting, and spots are selling fast. Learn more, register, check out the link in this episode's show notes. All right, let's get back to the show.
Yeah, so the question for today was to figure out how to grow profitability for Singaporean art museum. And my recommendation to our client would be to organize more commercial activities, specifically these special exhibitions. That could be catered to an international audience. The reason I say that is because we've seen that with three special exhibitions lasting 15 weeks would result in a profit of $6 million. And we could have also the possibility of using the extra 5 weeks for other purposes, like leasing out to increase the revenue that we get from the space that we have. As a next step, I'd like to propose looking at what the customers are actually looking at, so essentially the visitors, and how to structure the portfolio in a way that we could make it more enticing for other the domestic clients as well as international clients. And
great.
That's about it.
How are you feeling?
Not very good.
Okay, tell me more.
I don't know what happened with the structure. I thought it it was a very simple structure that I presented, and then turns out that it wasn't even close to what was needed for the case as much, because the case had a very specific goal. We wanted to calculate 3 versus 4, but that I didn't even think about. Like, there was no information from my side on that part. There was a lot of confusion in the beginning for calculating the revenue. I understand why, but I also don't understand why.
Okay.
Yeah.
Look, so no, I'm sorry. Oh, let me finally finish. Sorry.
No, I'm done. Please tell me.
Look, a couple of things. Firstly, directly relating to your point, I wouldn't necessarily focus on looking for a connection, particularly with an interviewer-led case, between the framework that you've done and the eventual analysis that you do. The case is a tool. The case interview is a tool for testing how you think about business, and for you to demonstrate how you think about business. So what you're really doing with the structure is demonstrating that you can be messy, demonstrating that you can lay out a problem, and also, which we'll go into, demonstrating a hypothesis-driven approach. It's very reflective of what the job is, right? So on the job, you know, I did a lot of due diligences. My team had to come to me on day one with a list of, you know, what they thought the key drivers were and what they thought the answer was and what the plan was for testing it. And so that's really what you're simulating. What analysis you actually do, it kind of skips a few steps deliberately because it's trying to test other things. So at a high level, though, taking a step back, I think this was a very good beginning. And I mean that, and I don't say that lightly, and a strong synthesis. And I think I would have passed you even though the maths went wrong, because you gave the impression for the first round, because you gave the impression that the maths was wrong because of nerves, not because of anything else. I didn't get the impression you couldn't do it. But had you done it in a partner interview, it kind of is what it is. It's difficult to solve that. Starting at the beginning chronologically, I think that you ask the right amount of questions up front. Often people don't ask enough questions up front. The key with the questions up front is to make sure you understand how the business works, particularly in a partner interview. They deliberately pick something that's like their most interesting case. Like my case used to be a bottle capping company that I worked with that I did diligence on. The safety bottle capping in India, completely random. You don't know how that business works. You have to ask a bunch of questions. And you asked enough questions to know kind of how the business works, and that was great. There are a couple of points that I always tell people, one of which you hit, which is always ask about the timeline, always ask what success looks like, and clarify any kind of definitional points. So commercial activity was the thing that was going to trip you up, potentially, and you made sure you clarified that, which was great. On the framework, I think the way I would think about this, you kind of do this instinctively, but the way I think about this profitability is you have like a diagnostic phase, which is your standard profitability framework, and then your execution phase, which is like can we do it phase. I would express it concretely as we're going to figure out what the problem is and what the potential solutions are, and then we're going to figure out if we can actually solve it. You know, diagnosis and execution, which again is what you did, that I think is best practice. To take it over the edge, hypothesis, right? Now, you should not be afraid to give your opinion based on limited data. Dealing with ambiguity is a key skill set for an MBB consultant. You just need to caveat it by saying, look, I don't know, but based on what I think, da 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 da. And there's multiple ways to demonstrate a hypothesis-driven approach, right? The first and most obvious is saying, look, it sounds like this is to do with commercial activity declining. My hypothesis is that it's going to be revenue driven. And given what I know about the world economy at the moment in Singapore, it seems like it's fairly robust in that part of the world. So it's probably something to do with how they're actually executing it rather than actual underlying demand. But I'd have to check that out. That's helpful just to see, you know, just to demonstrate that you're comfortable with ambiguity and that you're able to use incomplete data to form an initial hypothesis. The other way to do it is anytime you give a list of any kind, always rank it according to what you think the most important or the least important is. So when you're going through cost is a great example. you did the thing which a lot of people don't do, which is like saying, okay, this type of business probably has labor costs, rent, making it clear that you understand a museum business is going to have a completely different cost base to like a chemical business. That's great. You did that. To take it to the next level, give us a rank. So say, for a museum, I'm guessing they got a lot of old stuff, right? And it's going to take a lot of money to actually look after these things. So I'd imagine literally, curating activities, storage, polishing, whatever it might be, all of that stuff is a big cost for them and probably the key controllable cost, as well as rent, is probably significant to them, massive spaces. I'm making it up and I don't have the data, but you see how it takes it to the next level of demonstrating hypothesis. Yeah. Again, you would have passed with what you had, but that's just taking it to the next level. Okay. You need to train yourself over the next few weeks on how to deal with going outside of your comfort zone. Okay. So when you're in your comfort zone, you're very strong. As soon as you put a toe out of the boat, and dip the toe into the water being uncomfortable, it's when you start to waver. Now, a nice interviewer will help you. Most interviewers, they're looking for a reason at that point to reject you, to be quite honest. They're not tangibly, it's a competitive job, right? So they're kind of looking for things which might be difficult for you. And so, like I did, I saw you were out of your comfort zone. When we were talking about that funding thing at the beginning, I asked you a couple of follow-on questions just to see how you'd react, right? That's the kind of thing I would practice with your casemates, is say to them, look, if I make any kind of saying, if I misspeak at all, or if I make any sort of mistake, jump on it, right? And really test me on it. Because you need to practice those scenarios. That leads me to the maths. Now, with the maths, I think that what you've got to understand is your brain is not going to be working at 100% effectiveness in a case interview. Okay? In the best case, you've got 80% effectiveness. Okay? So you've got to create structures and create processes during the case which allow you to give yourself a break. Okay? So, for example, when you're talking about... what's a good example? So the maths itself, right? So when you're doing the maths, you need to lay out what you're doing as an equation, almost, with a bunch of variables to plug in. So I'm going to multiply the number of... I'm going to multiply the 2 weeks per exhibition multiplied by the 500,000, the maximum number. You don't even have to put numbers in. You can just say multiply by the maximum number, multiplied by number X, multiplied by number Y. Lay it on one half of the page, check in with the interviewer, make sure that you've got it right. Then, as soon as the interviewer and you are happy having that discussion, you can then execute that like you would be executing a model. Right? Split. Yeah. What you've got to do is split up the calculation from the modeling almost, the kind of laying out the equation activity, right? Because no one is smart enough in a pressure situation to do both. Yeah? And I would give that 80% of the issues you were having were down to that, were that you were kind of cross-calculating as you were working it out and you weren't communicating effectively, right? Second thing I think you should do is make sure you have a gut check, okay? So at a high level, you want to think to yourself, what is this going to be approximately, And always use easy numbers. The third thing is, when you're laying out the numbers that you're going to multiply, always ask to round. Always ask to round.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
This one didn't need a lot of rounding up, right?
I'm assuming we have one session. This one was fine, but I'm just saying, always best practice, always ask to round, even if they say no. Okay. Because you're not demonstrating anything negative. You're demonstrating, you're trying to make it more practical, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I like to hear people say that because that means, oh, okay, they're thinking about this practically. Yeah.
Makes sense.
And then the last thing is look for easy numbers. Okay. So if you'd started with the 11, for example, the 11 weeks, minus 2 is 9. 9 and 450 go really well together, right? Now, if you'd laid out the equation first, you'd have seen that.
Yeah.
Whereas true. What you did is just multiplied it by 3 at the beginning, right?
Which I mean, makes it more complicated.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because you're trying to do both at the same time.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, on the chart, and when you get to the end of calculation, always give your opinion, say, okay, like I said at the beginning, it's always about the ranking and what you think, right, what your perspective is. So always give an opinion when you get to a number at the end. So, the capacity threshold actually didn't make that much of a difference. The higher frequency offsets that. That's best practice. Final point I'll make is Jack Beth is now back, which means I'm running out of time. With the chart, you missed something. So with the chart, focus at first on what the trend is. You started with what the visitors were flat. Don't worry about that. Just say, look, okay, so it's all I needed was X Singapore, X Asia visitors are growing. The second thing is look for text below. The text below said includes business and tourist visitors. Right? You might have seen that, but you didn't say it. If you say that out loud, that gives you a clue to the next question, which is, maybe we can do conferences. Maybe we can do stuff for these business visitors that are growing.
Yeah.
That's interesting. Let's look into that a little bit. Your synthesis was great. So as I said, one more thing. Don't be afraid to be creative. So when someone asks you, what do you think? Give ideas. Don't worry about it. You know, that's your time to kind of come up with random ideas and at that point, just be you and a person talking. And the more the interviewer can be you and a person talking, in a room, the better it'll be. The case is like the structure around that helps you, right? But the whole thing should feel like a conversation. As I've said, I thought that the beginning was great, the end was great. I would have passed you for a first round because I would have taken a chance on you that you would improve the maths. The maths is going to be a problem if you don't, get on top of it for a partner interview. So you just got to practice that, and in particular, but less the maths, more getting outside of your comfort zone. That's your kind of what you've got to get exposure to, and you've got to find case partners that are smarter than you in particular areas. So if you're an artsy, you're a physicist, find someone who does modern languages or does history of art who's super bright. You know, find people that are complementary to your skill set as case partners, because that'll really drive value.
Yeah. Perfect. Thank you very much for your feedback. That's very useful.
No worries. Best of luck.
Thank you for tuning in to another live case episode. You can actually volunteer to be on the hot seat in one of these cases, just like Sonakshi was. Click the link in the show notes to submit yourself in an application. In addition, we'd love to hear your feedback on this episode. Let us know what you want more of, what you want less of, via the survey linked in this episode's show notes. Finally, we'd love to get your review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. Thank you for being a follower of the podcast. We're so glad you're in our community. We'll talk to you again very soon.